Of energy, environment, and sustainability committee to order. Please rise in the Pledge of Allegiance.
The flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
For the clerk, please call the roll.
Legislator Green?
Here.
Legislator Litt?
Here.
Legislator Nolan?
Here.
Legislator Sewell?
Here.
Thank you. I'd like to have approval of the March 10th, 2024 meeting minutes. Is there any discussion on the minutes of the March 5th meeting?
Seeing none, do I have a motion to approve the minutes of the March 5th meeting?
So moved.
A second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes approved. Because of
the way we're spread out, we excuse it before leaving for signatures on the resolutions. And for now, we're going to have a presentation by Melanie with the Cornell Cooperative Extension Executive Director.
Hello, everybody. My distinct pleasure to have you all here in our office. This office houses about 20 of our employees with a few more out in Watershed, the Neshoban Watershed Stream Management Program. So from here, I'm mostly going to do kind of a broad level view. If I start to get into all the programs that we run, I would kind of explode your brain. Last year, we ran almost as many programs as there were days in the year. We ran 320 programs, 328 programs last year through all of our staff and volunteers. So I will try to do kind of the 30,000-foot view, a little bit of a dive into some of the programs, and I have some of our program leaders here to answer any questions for you after if you want to have any more in-depth questions. So, we are... extension institutions. So those came in three waves. We are part of the 18. Integrated into the system. And in 1994, we had 38 tribal colleges. Right, that is loud. You will get used to it, but I'll try to project even more because of that. And so we are part of not only network throughout New York State, it's actually a national network. And I think you probably are keyed in, if you don't know us yet, who we're connected to within New York, and that is Cornell University. So this is a picture of a few of these. We took about 2 years back to a career exploration program. I like this picture because it's youth who were from our vet science program, it's youth who were from our, let's see, our RAP, our relatives as parents program, and some of our 4-H youth. They all got to go and act like they were at Cornell campus for 3 days in a variety of different tracks. They usually do a podcasting track, a vet science, animal science track, a number of different tracks. So we not only connect our young people to Cornell, we also connect the researchers of Cornell back with you all, and we do that in a number of ways. So we have research trials, mainly in the ag department, but in a number of different areas as well. We have internships right now. Our Shoka Marshall Stream Management Program is working with Masters of Math students, correct? Statistics students who are analyzing stream temperature data.
Stream hydrology.
Thank you. Perfect. Great. I'd like to be, I tell people to please fact check if I didn't get it exactly right. So we work with Cornell through research trials, through internships, through a number of other different ways, but we try to define it as a bi-directional track. Cornell stuff comes here. We also bring some of the things that we'd like Cornell to be working on to their attention. Civic engagement is something we're known for. I thought that might be a popular idea with this group. This was back in about a year ago, almost exactly to the day. We were working with an anti-racism group where the young people really said we want to learn more about how to work with this subject within the government. So we brought them and had some meetings with the county executive, then with the county legislature, where Megan did a really beautiful job of kind of highlighting any of the social or racial justice kind of initiatives that have gone through Ulster County. We also spoke with the Youth Bureau and the Human Rights Commission and got everybody's kind of different take on how they're interacting with this work. But we've also run a number of civic engagement tours with Nina Poster Pack, a number of other ways that we're trying to get our kids connected to government in a nonpartisan way, and understanding how the mechanics of how that works. So our economic impact, it is great. So for every $1 that the county brings or appropriates to Cornell Cooperative Extension of Ulster County, we bring $14 into Ulster County based on our good services and programs. So $1 to us appropriated, $14 back to Ulster County residents. We directly fund the environmental planner position in the DOE, relevant to this committee. And volunteer hours alone are worth about $335,000 between our 4-H and Master Gardener volunteers largely. Also wanted to highlight, so this is bison actually, locally raised bison on the left, that is from our regional farm to school program. So we have a great program there, which is to increase the volume and variety of New York State foods within schools. Lots of great work going in there, and they're actually actively doing local procurement that includes Kingston, Allenville, Onteora, and Sovereignty's. They assisted with over $42,000 of Ulster County schools for purchases of local foods. And yes, yeah, so the ground bison they were serving in one of these units. To talk a bit about our reach direct contacts last year, for a staff of about 30, a few shy of 30, we are a mighty group. We have 24,000 direct contacts reported from last year. Ag 17,000, AWSMG 1,600, healthy communities almost 3,000, and 4-H almost 1,700 direct contacts. That includes people who have attended programs, subscribed to our newsletters, or otherwise directly benefited from our organization. The indirect numbers are like so large they're absurd, so we don't usually include them. They're like more than our number of county residents. So for this particular committee, I wanted to highlight we actually work with 17 different county government departments and agencies. These are sort of some of the key ones I thought to mention here: aging, emergency management, environment, health, resource recovery, and social services are just a few of the organizations with whom we work. For departments or offices. I want to talk a little bit about programs, although as I said, I'm not going to get too in the weeds with programs. Can't name every single thing we do, but these were a few that seemed to be particularly relevant for this committee. So in our agriculture programs, we just recently ran a beginning farmer sold out program right here in this very office just a few weeks ago. We have new landowner educational programs. We do climate smart and soil health programs, pasture management, field crops and agronomy, integrated pest management, environmental and climate smart farming. Oops, I said that twice. It's important for this group. Local food systems and supply chains. So that's sort of our commercial agriculture programs. We also do a lot of Master Gardener. Those are our consumer-focused agricultural programs. We have over 80 active volunteers, one staff, who really help us to deliver that program. So they provide a number of services to our consumers within Ulster County. That includes training, outreach, and workshop. They've been doing an active winter lecture series, community and school projects, hotline and questions. This is the time of year where if you come on a Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, from 9 to 12, you will usually, it is pretty busy in here between soil samples, people calling the hotline. There's a few different volunteers working every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Demo gardens, such as SUNY Ulster, the Sarahscape Garden. And they are responsible for the Ulster County Fair for the, judging all of the shows that come in from the adult all the exhibits that come in from the attorney. So they kind of helped to run that entire building. For 4-H, moving over to our second program area, the technical definition of 4-H is any program that happens under the cooperative extension arm, any youth program that serves youth 5 to 19. I was highlighting just a few of the things. Really, our county appropriation helps us to run a club-based program, which is the program that people most often think about us for. It doesn't always reach everybody in our community, which is why we also run a number of other kinds of programs. Our presentations program, we run a free program to train youth in public speaking skills and give them feedback to be successful. We've had award-winning youth from our district. Our district here in New York has done some really amazing work on this. And I actually wanted to put in a plug because I wanted to talk to you all about developing out a legislative talks category. I was briefly at one of the meetings where I was like, wow, 2 minutes is really hard to get your point across in a legislative session. And wow, a lot of people don't really know how to communicate their point, right? So I figured let's start training them young and help them to really, truly communicate their point. So I think that's one we've started to develop. We've had one or two kids pilot it. I'd really like to continue building that one out. I think it's in service for all of us, right? So that was at last year's fair. Wanted to invite you all to the Ulster County Fair as legislators, elected officials. We always have something right before the Ulster County Fair's opening ceremonies at 6 o'clock, where we have a couple of our young people who are well-practiced and have usually ascended to various levels of accomplishment, give their presentations, and then we walk through the building and the barns with you and kind of give you an idea of what the massive amount of exhibits. There's usually over 1,000 exhibits between animal and exhibits within the youth building that our 4-H'ers have put together. Yes.
Every year for the past few years, the Climate Smart Committee has worked with the Ag Society.
Yes.
And I just want to be sure you're aware and that it's the time of year to start meeting about that.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So we have definitely been part of that committee as well, various people on healthy communities, and we certainly like to connect and help out as we're able to as well.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So you're invited. You'll get a formal invitation and a milkshake. So you don't mess around. You do have the best milkshakes in New York State.
This is true.
Thank you, Eric. Much appreciated. Wanted to also let this committee know we are actually piloting the very first in New York to pilot a national level program that actually filmed just a few days ago outside the back of our building where youth were learning how to use fire extinguishers. They also go on. So we're piloting what's called a MyPI, My Preparedness Initiative program. It's been done at a national level. We're the first people in New York State to be piloting it here. And for each one of the youth, I think we have 5 youth we wanted to pilot small, enrolled in the program. They have to go and create an emergency evacuation plan for 6 households. They learn CPR. They learn how to use a fire extinguisher. We hear more and more about the crunch on our emergency services. We thought this could be a great service for our 4-H program to be taking advantage of. Also, our inclusion and belonging programs. So we've been doing a number of programs to bring in youth that might not have been able to connect to some of our more traditional kind of 4-H club programs. One of them was the Act for Change program. We actually worked with Legislator Sperry with one of her other hats in SUNY New Paltz, where she donated a day of filming in SUNY New Paltz. And we had a great 7-minute video that explains what this program meant to these kids that I hope you get to see. I'll make sure to send it around. Okay, our Healthy Communities is the third of our programs, and it's a sort of family of programs that is parenting, nutrition, and a lot of policy and other initiatives. So this is our Blender Bike Kickoff at Edson Elementary School. Great way to get some exercise and make a nice tasty smoothie. So all in all, these programs bring in a little bit over $500,000 to our county every year and work very closely with a number of different agencies. So they run the Healthy Ulster Council and are well connected to many of you. I think we also have our climate resilience programs are within that umbrella of Healthy Communities. And our climate resilience programs, this is a planning session, have done 37 programs in 17 different communities throughout Ulster County since 2019. 2 of them were certified as bronze, 11 were certified or sorry, 2 were certified as silver, 11 were certified as bronze. It takes a lot of work to get these certifications, and it helps these communities access more money that helps to make them more climate resilient. So it's not just an award to put up, it actually helps them to access. SNAP Ed, so that's our federal, we deliver a federal nutrition program that serves quite a few people every year. This is happening, and we've done a lot of great work in Ellenville, which is a community that I'm proud that we're doing a better job of serving in recent years. So we partnered to do a fruit and vegetable prescription program with them, and with Peter's Market provide nutrition education and vouchers for fresh fruit and vegetables. On the left is the Ellenville Regional School District. Our Shokan Watershed Stream Management Program is recognized as a national model by the National Academies of Science and as a state-level model for our flood analysis and mitigation program. That is really focused on water quality and stream stability. We've had millions of dollars in funding, which helped for towns and county for project implementation since 2010. That includes infrastructure help and highly specialized education and technical assistance that guides towns and landowners with handling stream and flooding issues. It's delivered locally, the Shokan Watershed Stream Management Program, in partnership with Ulster County Soil and Water. And our funding was just renewed, hooray, through 2029 as part of the Watershed Protection Program. A few other stats. We have been operating that program since 2006 in the Shokan Watershed for almost 20 years. We have the highest concentration of certified floodplain managers in New York State due to the education programs we've run. We have trained over 25 local officials and highway department staff in advanced stream and floodplain management techniques in the past year. We have coordinated over $7 million in stream implementation projects. And we have also accessed other New York City funding of over $12 million to hire local contractors and professionals. We're also in job market. Our staff are highly skilled with advanced degrees and certifications and are some of the best in the business. I did just want to give you all a sense of, I put a couple kind of ballmarks on. This is the county appropriation retrospective of the money that we've received from Ulster County adjusted for inflation. 1992 just happened to be a funny, we just kind of archived all of our programs, but I did have an annual report land on my desk recently for the 1992 and was actually frankly shocked to learn that we had over $500,000 between our appropriation and headquarters in 1992 adjusted for inflation. That's over $1 million. In 2010, $644,000 with adjustments. In 2012, almost $500,000. And in 2024, $371,000. At this point, I'm saying this to you all because I'm proud of how much we've been able to leverage our county appropriation to bring so much money into Ulster County. I do want to plant the seed that, you know, the county appropriation is very, very important, and at any point, you know, we may need to come back and say, is this doing everything that we can, is this an appropriate amount? But I do want folks to be aware of sort of the downward trend that has been affecting not just here in Ulster County, but also kind of across the state.
Just a question about that?
Yes.
Especially in relationship to the Shokan Watershed Stream Management Program, mm-hmm. Is it possible that some of the monies that come to Cornell for things that the county used to provide are now being provided through contracts with the DEP or the Stream Management Program? It seems to me like there's, in 1992, there was a whole different world. I mean, it's pre-charter and all that.
Yes, absolutely.
But there were also different funding streams.
Yes.
And so my understanding, I'm going to call it,
sure.
Over the time that I've been following committees, even before I was elected to the legislature, is that there is a certain amount of work we want to get done, and there's these various funding streams for it, and we would like to minimize the county appropriations when there are state or city or other sources. So that chart is helpful, but I'm not sure it's the full story.
I'll fill in the little gaps if I can, and if you have more, I'm happy to answer as I'm able to. But So cooperative extension programs used to be a third federally funded, a third state funded, and a third county funded. The number of state dollars is actually attached to the number of county dollars. So if county dollars decrease, so do our state dollars. Those are called state 524 dollars and fill in critical monies as well. I think our budget used to be very largely the county appropriation, and we've since sort of had to get more and more savvy about how to bring in grants and contracts, because there have been times where we've had significant cuts, had to lay off a number of staff, yet knew the good that we were doing in the community. So I think this is mostly a happy graph for me of just a testament of how much we've been able to come off of county appropriation and dollars. While actually bringing in 40 different grants and contracts, over 40 contracts every year into Ulster County, that appropriation is still critical for us to be able to access. It gives us the leverage to be able to say that we're bought in, that the county is bought into the work that we do, that the state is bought into the work that we do, and the feds kind of, that money keeps disappearing more and more. But like, for example, the Ashoka Watershed is like 100% grant funded, so it doesn't have impact. It's kind of increased our reach, but like that money is, you know, for the work that they are doing within that scope that didn't exist before 2006. So it's I couldn't resist one cute little silly dog picture and just let you know that you're all invited to a CPUC showcase. So as much as I love presenting to you all and letting you know about the good work we do, I like people to experience the good work we do and actually come to some workshops that we'll be running at either low or no cost for those. I'd love to talk more with the county about that, but we're having that showcase on Friday, November 1st at the Ashokan Center from 2 to about 7:30. We're hoping it'll help us to have even more reach, have more people access our programs, and would love all your thoughts about how we can get out the word about this event and also get some people there. You are certainly invited. It's designed to be kind of an experiential program, sampling to attract both new volunteers and participants. So I do have three of our program leaders here. So Christian, who's with the Ag program, Melinda is with the Healthy Communities program, and Leslie, who is with the Ashokan Watershed Stream Management program. So if anybody else has any questions, I also wanted to give you an opportunity to ask them to.
I have a quick question for Leslie.
Sure.
The stream management program thing, because of that DEP watershed, does the city take on the bulk of that funding, the city of New York?
That program's 100% New York City. We are able to leverage federal funds with city funds, the city's municipal match with federal funds, so the towns can take advantage of our funding in order to bring in federal funding and use the city funds as match. But it is 100%, but it doesn't really bring any profit to the association. They do cover our costs, but I would add that we to work outside the New York City watershed, we actually don't have funding to do that right now. But we have a lot of expertise that we can bring to that. So that's kind of where we're at.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Is there anything going forward to get a USDA facility in the Hudson Valley?
So we have a multi-county in Hudson Valley part of a meat processing work team that spans third-party organizations, other county governments, other cooperative extensions. We've looked at the feasibility of this, some people in outside organization ran a year-long grant to hire a consulting firm who came back with what they said was, rather than put a plan here, that it was actually what was needed was someone to coordinate with all the processes in the region for all the operations that are currently in existence, because there just wasn't enough processes in the region to attract more meat processing. So that was their findings. I don't know if they based that on whatever survey they put out. And again, this came from a third-party organization that has research grants.
Unfortunately, that's unrealistic.
Any other questions? Thank you, Melanie. And if you're staying for economic development, we'll get a second presentation. Okay, moving on to resolutions. Today's session, resolution number 157, creating funding position for the Climate Justice Fellowship, amending the 2024 Ulster County Budget, Youth Bureau.
I'm very happy to move it.
Great. Second. Any discussion, questions?
This is for the intern program, similar to what we did last year.
Climate Justice Fellow. It's an annual salary of $53,700. Benefits within the Department of Youth Programs.
The fellow is, I think, a new position, but we worked with the interns. And this, I think it's this year, no, it's the next year, that moves all of them together into one program. But this is only for, I think, a higher level position to supervise and coordinate this program. That's what I understood. And the program is set to run until the summer of 2025, but this funding is just for the second half of this year.
Let's say it wrong. Any other discussion? Questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? I need a motion to adopt. You made the motion, right?
I make all of my motions to adopt unless otherwise specified, but I will specify if that's what you would like.
So you need the words motion to adopt. And
okay.
You've made the motion. Legislator Donaldson made the second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Resolution is adopted. Resolution number 158, moving Climate Corps interns to the Youth Bureau, amending the 2024 Ulster County Budget.
I'll move it for adoption.
Second.
Aye.
Legislator Nolan with a second. Legislator Green, do you have a question?
Can we have discussion after it's been moved for adoption?
Yeah.
Okay. I just will be talking a little bit about
the... Could you speak up a little bit?
I will be talking a little bit about the Renewable Energy Implementation Plan, but I do want to say that we really need help, and it could come in the form of assigning Climate Corps interns. So I don't know. I did reach out a little bit, but we haven't had a discussion about it, but I just want to sort of bookmark that we may want to figure out and possibly add to this with that position. Or there is a NYSERDA grant, and we're looking into getting a NYSERDA grant to, we would still have to fund a small portion. But it's relevant because I think that working with the Renewable Energy Working Group would be an outstanding internship for a Climate Corps volunteer or a piece of several.
Great. Thank you.
Legislator Nolan? Posting, seeking interns, I believe it is, has quite an extensive list of potential projects. So we should check that project list and see if some of them would relate to what you're suggesting or if it's even already there. If it's not there, then what I would like to see, and I think is present in that list, is not just work on renewable energy. but the specific direction of a project of what would be accomplished that would bring in renewable energy through such and such a mechanism.
Yeah, we have done both. We've looked at the list and started to specify what we need and what would be, I think, of value. So it's probably going to take another conversation to refine that, but I wanted to make the committee aware and kind of bookmark it because it's a real need.
Legislator Nolan, for the record, when you said posting, seeking interns, is that on the website?
Yes, I think the county sent out a notice of Deputy Executive LaVos and tell us the details.
There has been a press release out. There is information for interns. There are a long list of projects. One of the projects that we're looking at having interns to support, and perhaps there's an opportunity to talk about sharing an intern is with the Community Climate Action Plan. And this is an initiative that has received grant funding from DC, the Climate Smart Communities Program that Department of the Environment is leading, which is to look at how do we take what the county does across various departments, including the health department, Department of Environment, employment training, economic development, tourism, and think about what are the actions as far as the Community Climate Action Plan. And there's a lot of very natural synergies with a plan that's looking at renewable energy generation, and I think it benefits all to have those plans closely aligned and supportive of each other, so there might be an opportunity there to have some support to that group for that interest.
I think that sounds great, and maybe this is a good place to bring it together and have as an ongoing old business item, report back from both those efforts so that we see how it's all coming together.
Great idea. Thank you. Adding that now. Legislator Stewart?
So with the Climate Corps, with the Climate Corps volunteers, I mean, do we get a list of will we be provided with a list of who's going to be serving in what positions?
There is right now on the website a list of departments and we have projects that have been kind of tailored to the overall goals and also the needs of the department. So you can view that list. But then moving this, all the payroll to youth, is really saves a lot of administrative burden, and we figured out a way to do it where the direct supervisors can still supervise time cards, but they're all in one department, which is an administrative streamline.
So it makes administration much easier.
Right, yes.
Also, I just want to give a shout out. I've worked with one of your Climate Corps volunteers, and Nassim Hadawi, and he is awesome. So if he is representative of the group, the county has done very well.
Any additional questions or discussions?
I just want to distinguish that those projects
are all for departments. And we're asking to share some of that energy and intelligence with the legislature, with a working group that was appointed by the legislature.
And I would perhaps offer for future years that there be a spot potentially budgeted for legislative projects or initiatives.
I think that would be excellent.
Mm-hmm.
To be continued.
If we do our communication well, that distinction of, you know, whether it's serving a department or serving a legislative project, it's all serving Ulster County. So I agree that it's nice to have somebody that the legislature can say, this is something that we don't think is being caught, you know, kind of work in that fashion. I think that's good. But I also think that the shared goals should break down that distinction and that the intern need not think that they're working just for environment if they're working on a zero waste project that is being managed through a committee. of the legislature.
And if, I would just add to that, saying that we're very much looking at the whole picture of operations, of, you know, our near-term and longer-term climate goals, as far as sustainability, greenhouse gas emissions reduction, and also thinking about, you know, where are we particularly perhaps need that additional capacity, like ASAP for a certain project. You know, we're really looking at that bigger picture when we're allocating those resources and kind of determining those projects.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Thank you very much. Resolution number 159, declaring Ulster County's intent to act as lead agency under New York State Environmental Quality Review Act, CEQRA, for the construction of a public safety radio tower and appurtenances to be located at 1915-1925 Lucas Avenue in the town of Rosendale, Department of Emergency Services.
Make a motion to adopt this.
I'll second.
Great. Any discussion or questions?
Yeah, I have some discussion on this.
You would like to go? Mine was clerical. The last whereas, there is a reference to Trachy Mountain, so that should be corrected. That should be Rosendale.
I was confused on that, too. Okay.
Was that your question?
No, that wasn't my question, but I was confused. basically, I just wanted to be sure. I mean, the property that's in question where this tower is going to be built is at the Rundown Municipal Complex, which is the shared town hall of Marbletown and Rosendale. And in speaking with the town supervisor in Marbletown, and previous conversations with the executive's office, one of the major concerns we have in this area is cell phone coverage. And, you know, I just want to be sure that there's going to be significant and appropriate communications between the county and the municipalities that are involved, because there's a real concern that there's just a real concern that, you know, the towns want to be able to express their views and are aware of negotiations that are going on with the cell companies, and we want to be sure that, you know, in addition to Verizon, you know, it talks about being able to co-locate cell companies with the tower. So, I mean, it's great, and I think it's wonderful that, you know, we're upgrading our emergency radio network, but if people are unable to call 911 because they don't have cell coverage, it doesn't really help. Want to be sure that cell coverage will be addressed in this town.
Typically, any of these towers are built so that the highest position is given to the radio communication,
mm-hmm.
and then the tower is ideally designed for the load in order to take additional cell carriers to need that. But, you know, the main goal is that emergency communication network.
Right.
And then below it go the cell
service. So there'll be opportunities for multiple
yes.
cell services.
And especially if this one, if it's not the retrofit of an existing tower, where you get into things where, you know, does it have the load capacity, things like that. So this is a better design for that.
Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, just to elaborate on that, the ability to put cell carriers on depends upon your location and the height of the tower and the strength of the tower. And if you're building on an existing tower, that can be problematic. If you're building in a problematic site, you can have difficulty. We have out in my district.
Right.
But this one, where it is at this municipal site, which is a, you know, big open area with a lot of flat land, I think you should be able to do it, but that would be part of what would come out in the design. And I just wanted to mention, since Planning Director Doyle isn't here, that this is a coordinated review, so it will be Ulster County and the town of Rosendale
And that will...
And the town of Marbletown.
And the town of Marbletown, I presume, because that's their site as well. Although that's not mentioned here, actually, I guess, because of the site being in Rosedale.
Right. The Random Musical Complex is actually located in Rosedale, despite the fact that it's...
But it's both communities.
So we just want to be sure that the town of Marbletown...
And they typically go forward in front of the town, both towns, with that public interest test, et cetera, you know, talking about the design and all the aspects of the tower.
Well, thank you. Legislator Green?
Yeah, I just also want to be sure that the work that we're doing on siting solar in municipalities, that would be a potential site. So it just with some forethought, the location of the tower could be placed so that solar could still be developed on that site if the towns involved decide they want to proceed with that.
And I would say beyond in this forum, if these can be particular comments through the CEPR process, you know, that's the kind of formal mechanism for making these comments as well.
I mean, the purpose of this tower, for the past 25 or 30 years, we've been trying to improve the emergency service communication because the police, the towns cannot talk to each other, and it really is a matter of public safety. And now we're finally putting these towers up, and that's the purpose of this. If we can sell a space on a tower to a cell phone, that's great. The county will make money. But the whole purpose is not to make money with this tower. It's to enhance and provide emergency service communication.
Thank you very much. Any questions, anything to add? And just following up with Legislator Prince's comment, and I mean, I agree totally, and but like I say, it is their cell phone service is a big problem there on Lucas Avenue. And also more in my neighborhood in Marbletown, and I think anything that we could do to improve cell phone service would be greatly welcomed and appreciated and needed in that location. So just my two cents. So thank you.
Any other thoughts or questions, discussion? We'll take a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? And now we'll move on to some...
Chris, I do have a question. The tower, will there be security around it?
The reason I'm bringing this up is because I work at a place where we have cell phone companies who put their equipment on our tank.
And we're a water department, so we have a fence around it. So whenever the companies have to come and work on their equipment, we either have to call somebody in to open a gate for them or, you know, and I was just wondering... And especially, it's going to be a it's going to be a 911 tower. Is there going to be any kind of security, or?
Typically, the ones that I've seen have fences around them or standalone towers. You know, because there's some kind of equipment building. Sometimes there's power supply, like so you can sense it. Usually, what I've seen is there's like a shared lock system. Yeah. Maybe it's different because it has to do with water supply, but I can ask emergency management.
And is there going to be like a manager of this?
Of just that tower?
Of the tower,
because we have another problem with the companies. They come in, they work on their equipment, they exchange their equipment, and they just leave it there. And we have to
call them up
and right. You know, really kind of jump on.
I haven't, so... You know, typically this would be if it's the, you know, as the primary goal of this is emergency communication, as Legislator Litt said, so those would be our vendors, okay. Right, who are doing work for the county, answering to county employees. Any third party sub to a cell phone company, again, you know, I haven't heard of any problems similar to that in the past, but I can ask emergency management.
If I'm not mistaken, I think that's where our police department is.
Is?
That's our Bresendale police are based.
Yeah. Yeah, so not that it's their job, but just so you know that they are there. It's an open.
They are there.
It's like having a big dog.
There are cars parked in the driveway.
Yes, there are black and white vehicles.
Any other discussion? We already voted on it. We're going to move on to reports. First, Executive Director Mark Ryder from the UCRRA.
So thank you for having me. I will be relatively brief. I just have 4 points to bring up on this month's report. The first, we have submitted our schedule and plan for the household hazardous waste events for this year to the DEC. We are still waiting for their approval, so I'm going to give you some dates, but those are tentative at this point. I wanted to give you dates for the first one, especially because it's this month, April 27th from 8 to 12, New Paltz at our transfer station there. Then in Kingston, Town of Ulster at our transfer station, June 23rd from 8 to 12. Back in New Paltz on August 24th, same time. And back in Kingston on October 20th. Again, those could change if the DEC doesn't approve the plan. We always take appointments. I think we're able to get through about 300 Ulster County residents in that those timeframes for each event. They typically fill up. So I'm going to be checking in with the DEC this week, bless you, just to find out when we can expect to receive approval, especially since the first event is 25 days away. So.
And for our listeners, can you just describe the hazardous waste a little bit?
Sure. So we, like I said, we've done this event for typically 4 times a year. And household hazardous waste could be anything from paints, other chemicals, although the paints can often be, you know, returned to the store. We have a whole list of the chemicals. If people go to ucrra.org, they are able to click on the recyclopedia and also the link for the household waste events. That will tell you what you can bring. We subcontract this out through a vendor that comes in and does the event, and they're the ones that discard everything. I just wanted to give you an update on a contract that the agency is working on. We received a NYSERDA grant for vehicle to grid EV. This will allow us to purchase 2 electric vehicle haulers that we will use to haul recycling from the town MRDCs back to our transfer station. So think of the, you know, the garbage trucks you see, 2 large EV haulers. And the infrastructure that goes along with that. I have been told by the contractor that the chargers that we put in place would be able to be used by a bus if that's helpful. So we're looking at where we would map. We would put at least one at our agency, but given we want to have the ability to reach some of the further MRDCs, we would also probably put them out and maybe coordinate with UCAT on a helpful place for a route. So we're really excited about that. It's going to allow us to buy these 2 EV haulers for the same price or a little bit cheaper than we would a diesel hauler. And just because I'm predicting Legislator Green's question at this time, we're not going to back up the, like, this is vehicle to grid, so the stations, the EV charging stations are intended to feed power back while we're charging our vehicles at night. If there's a load necessity in the area, these will feed electricity back into the grid, so we can't operate these with solar power, but we will look at offsetting that with other solar on site. So, yes.
What's the average charge?
That I don't have the details for, so I'll have to. I know it's less than like the 8 to 10 hours overnight. Those details are not there,
so
but I'll
what
follow
you would
up.
Probably do is have one at your facility, have one somewhere else.
Yeah.
So this truck would go down, this truck would go up, but you wouldn't be able to go down back.
No, the range that they're showing, when we go to our furthest MRDCs, we believe we can do a round trip. The reason we're piloting the program with only two vehicles, the grant award was, I think, for up to five or six. So we encourage this company to go talk to the city of Kingston or other municipalities to add their vehicles. We want to just take care of the recycling because it's lighter loads when we do the pilot, and they claim that they can handle the heavier MSW loads. We want to see with recycling first. If it works out, then we'll probably purchase more vehicles and more charging stations. They claim the range can get you all the way out to Shenandoah. So, we'll see.
60-ish miles?
Yeah.
And when do these come online?
We are in the process of contracting with them, but their schedule was 2025. Like summer-ish.
Thank you.
I'd be excited about a waste of recycling haul.
Exactly. Those are the two easy pieces. I want to give you an update on the Cornerstone report. So we had hired the engineering firm Cornerstone to take on a few tasks for the agency, one of which was their review of the HydroQuest report and study. And that was task one. Task two was looking at closed landfills throughout the county and determining if any of them are reclaimable. So, and then there was a third task that was, they were supposed to look at regionalization. So think back to Gus and that. They came in, they've given us a draft kind of copy of the report. I found it to be incomplete at this point. And so we have changed their task three. We're removing what was task three because that's a lot of the work that I'm going to do as executive director is partnerships with our regional counties. I'm already starting to make some of those connections. I don't need an engineering firm to do that. What we've asked them to turn into task three, and they've given us a proposal and we've given them the go-ahead, was to look at other sites of at least 50 acres throughout the county. Right now, all they looked at was the 10 sites through the HydroQuest study and landfills that were already closed. That is not the bulk of locations that a landfill could possibly be sited throughout the county. So they have now expanded their scope. They're going to submit one report that includes all three tasks at the end. I've been told that we should expect that in the next 3 to 6 months, probably more on the 3 month side. I've lowered the threshold of acreage to 50 acres because through our diversion efforts in the future, I believe that that will suffice. What I didn't want is, you know, that 50 acres to be made up of 50 to 100 parcels. So we kind of did say, let's be reasonable. I don't want, if we were to determine a site, I don't want the RRA to have to go out and purchase 20 to 30 separate parcels to make up the one site. So they are going to be reasonable there. But that work will definitely be more comprehensive, and I plan to be able to, report out or release that to the public sometime in the summer-ish. It's important that we don't kind of do a patchwork of these tasks, like report out on if they found anything in the HydroQuest study that should have been added back in, because then we're not looking at the whole picture and towns will be like, okay, we were on this report, right? And they will pass legislation and do other things. So it's important we take a comprehensive view and get all of the sites that are feasible at the same time so that we can give you all the best information that you have. Happy to take questions on that.
You mentioned task one, there's a draft, but you probably purposely didn't say what was in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, just to the point that I just made, I'm not going to add in any other sites. We've already gone through, like, I'm not going to publicly, it's a draft report, it's confidential, it's not fillable, I'm not going to be sharing it right now because of what we've seen happen in the past.
But it might be what?
It's not foilable. It's not a completed report.
Legislator Green?
Yeah, just to follow up.
I think one of the things to take into consideration that may not be specifically in the scope of work is environmental justice. And I personally feel that Plattekill has had its share, and it would be, I think it can be ruled out on the basis of environmental justice. It's just a way of looking at it, but it's something that gets overlooked. That's why we're having very specific language in the Climate Act, a diversity coordinator, et cetera. But I think that that's a consideration.
If I could just speak to that, I mean, so in the HydroQuest study itself, any site that was located, I think we need to narrowly define what an environmental justice site is, and that has its own definition. Any site that was in a location that is in an environmental justice site was taken off the board in the HydroQuest study itself. The reason I am not willing to release a draft report is because I get phone calls from residents in Plattekill or real estate agents that their properties are basically worthless at this point, because properties that were never intended to be released because it was never a completed study got released, and then now people can't even sell the property because it's near something that may have been at one point considered to be. At this point, the agency is not looking at siting a landfill at any one particular location, and the study and the report, the draft report, didn't lean that way either. So with incomplete information causes consequences. You have people who have their entire life savings in properties, and they say that they can't sell them. I think that's unfortunate, and I don't want that to happen to another community. It's sad that it had to happen to Plattekill. And I wish that I could tell people on those phone calls that I can with certainty say Plattekill's off the, you know, table. I can't with certainty say that, but I also can say it's not a preferred site at this point.
I think it's...
This is a real improvement over what was being done previously. I think it's what needs to be done. So,
Legislator Nolan.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would just support what Director Ryder has requested. The UCRA is talking about having this report from Cornerstone within 3 to 6 months. They'll move along expeditiously, I presume, and then we get a full and complete picture of what I expect will be the geography and the geology, and to some extent considerations like environmental justice and pragmatics, but then it will be up to the legislature receiving that report from the UCRA and in collaboration with them to decide what the next step would be, which might be further study of a smaller number of sites. And once we would move to that, any community that's not on the short list would then be relieved, I guess, in this instance, because we have not yet created a framework in which a community is certain to be grateful to have a site. I think that it would be good for us and the UCRA to look at the things that could influence a community to welcome the siting of a facility that could be handled in more modern ways and have a very different impact on the community than prior landfills have had. And to the extent that we do that part of the work, we may have a very different picture in terms of communities that may need income and may have suitable geography geology and other features for the siting of the facility.
Director Reiner, did you have thoughts?
I do. Just want to say with the passing of March 25th, we are now on the clock as far as a March 2025 deadline for a county contract. So back in 1991, the agency was created. There was a contract that is just now coming. The termination date of the contract was tied to when we were done paying off our bonds on the initial when we took out bonds on the initial capital work. So that is March of 2025. That contract is a contract between the county and the agency to create and implement the local solid waste management plan. Without that contract, then essentially the county would be obligated to operate the local solid waste management plan. So there are going to be a lot of things back and forth. I know the UCRA Reform Committee is going to weigh in on this. I am going to be working on some recommendations that the agency side has. I'm sure the county executive and the legislature will want to see things added into it. My only point is I think the report is due out in June, where they will make some recommendations. I believe the work needs to start even prior to that on some of the smaller things. You all do not have a session in January because you have a reorganizational meeting, and it's going to be, I'm not going to be comfortable with the February passing of this resolution to approve the contract, because I'm not going to know whether I'll have an agency, but what are they going to be doing at that point? So we really need to have this completed and passed by you all in December. So that's a lot of words to say. A lot of work needs to be done between now and then, and just putting it on your radar.
Can we slide into a reform committee report? Would that be appropriate now?
I think now's a good time.
Thank you.
Yes.
Just to say that the UCRA Reform Committee is kind of divided its work into waste diversion, disposal, and intergovernmental issues. The intergovernmental issues are the contract, but also there's a lingering potential resolution that was floated last year but not acted upon to expand the agency board. So that's an example of an intergovernmental, and then what the future of the agency is going to be. And the committee has made a lot of progress in terms of waste diversion, and the chair of the committee is going to write that up, and I understand that he was appointed for the year, and even though Mike Baden has stepped down as supervisor, I believe he's going to stay on the committee, and he has a lot of the notes and everything. So we'll finalize a section on waste diversion and then be looking at waste disposal. And one of the things I'm going to be requesting is that we do essentially a greenhouse gas inventory on a landfill with methane capture, pyrolysis, incineration, or whatever the potential disposal is, shipping it by rail to someplace else. All of those, we need to understand what the climate impacts are. And so as you're in communication with the engineering firm, you might let them know that we're thinking about that, and I'm also making sure that the executive branch is aware that we are.
If I could just speak to that, I do know we have board members that are interested in an inventory. One thing that I didn't include in my report that I meant to was that we will be creating a bid and going out to bid later this month for transport and disposal. I believe it's imperative that we look at both of those things together and those costs. That in the past they've been two separate bids, which I think gave us a false kind of sense on cost of sending everything to Seneca Meadows. But I think doing the bids together and then also having some, whether it's not a straight up RFP if it's a best value solicitation, but looking at climate, if it is a straight up RFP, looking at the climate impact of transporting our waste 1.8 million road miles away every year in a 39-ton hauler that gets probably 4 miles to the gallon. I mean, you can see that when we do the inventory, that's going to have a huge footprint, correct? So it's something that's on our radar. In the local solid waste management plan, they did identify other landfills that were willing to accept our waste. What they didn't do it last time they did the bid is, I think, contact them and let them know the bid was there. They kind of probably posted it and did some other things because we didn't get all those places that said they were willing to accept our waste. We didn't get bids from them or proposals. So I'm going to be following up with like the Albany County landfills and others that are much closer, and hopefully we're not shipping 250 miles each way.
Have you checked with Dutchess County at all?
Yeah, so the week of April 22nd, I'm meeting with their kind of one of their deputy execs, and we're going to tour the waste energy plant. I'm going to be sitting down with the RA and also seeing, you know, what a lot of people don't know is that, or do know, but that waste energy plant is offline a lot and is kind of almost end of life. So they are going to need to have a solution. When I talk about, I think before you came in the room, I talked a little bit about regionalization and making partners and used the example of Gus, but I think that's an outdated example because it's not going to, if we do regionalization, it's not going to be Green and Sullivan and Ulster only. You know, I know that Westchester and others, potentially Orange County built a landfill for a lot of money and it sits empty, right? And so they all, Westchester has incinerators that are need to be re-permitted. All of these counties have needs for waste disposal.
When you say regional, is it just, whether it's more than Green and Sullivan and us, is it the same tactic, which it's just gather all our trash, get a big volume, and then get a better price somewhere else? Or is an incineration the cleanest type incineration plant, regional plant on the a possibility?
I haven't taken any, the board either hasn't taken any kind of technologies off the board. I'm very interested in like anaerobic digestion and what that can do. It can take about 60 to 80% of our waste when you take away recycling as well, and basically turns it into digestate or renewable gas. I think that it's hard in New York, A, to site a landfill, so we need to be cognizant of that.
It might not happen.
That if it does happen, it's going to be, and I don't think this should stop us from trying, but it's going to be 10 to 15 years. It took that long 20 years ago. So, but I think if we can divert almost everything else out, having a smaller footprint of a local landfill and accepting some regional waste, or having that smaller local landfill be a county away, right? But we're getting rid of all the toxics. We're getting rid of all the organic food waste, which really smells. And we're really just looking at what can't be diverted. Then we're in a lot better shape, right? And if we're doing it regionally, we're going to have the throughput to be able to do that. And like what I would see with partnerships would be, let's have, because it's a priority of the executive, let's have organic waste diversion be Ulster County. Let's have, you know, Dutchess continue to incinerate the pharmaceuticals that they receive. And let's do a patchwork, but let's really work together to solve our own crisis and not ship it 300 miles away.
Legislator Walz?
Just a short story that's relative to what we're doing here. A few weeks ago, I have an old wood pile in my yard that I needed to get rid of. It got started to rot. You know how wood is. If you don't use it, it turns to... So I have a small one-ton dump truck, and I filled it up, and I called UCRA and, you know, spoke to a nice lady up there, and she said, no, your only option is to pay a tipping fee and drive it up here. And I wasn't averse to paying the fee, but I did mention it to Legislator Green, and she said to me, give me a couple of days, and she called me back, and she found a place in Clintondale. It's actually on Herds Road. I don't know, it might be Lloyd, Town of Lloyd, where they actually took this this firewood, and they have like they do stumps and old firewood and things like that. So it didn't go into the, you know, to the landfill thing or that, and I didn't have to pay a tipping fee. So I just thought it was something that, you know, keep that stuff out of the processing, and thank you.
You're welcome. And just so people know, that was Greenway Environmental Services, and they have just been authorized to do a pilot program in the town of Hurley to maximize waste diversion. And so I think it'll be interesting. They think they can achieve, I don't remember if it's 80 or 90%, very, very high waste diversion. So, you know, we'll see how that works out if it goes through. It has been passed, but this concern about how to pay the initial, I think it's $20,000. Do you have anything more? Do you know anything more about that?
There's a list of speakers.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Eric, do you want to add anything? I was just going to say that basically what you just said is what I know. Although I did just receive a message from a member of the Hurley Town Board who wants to discuss this with us.
I could, and I'll be super quick. It's just that before we go doing a bunch of pilot programs, I want to stress that food waste is municipal. It's MSW, so it's still controlled under flow control. Right now, we don't delegate food waste to other places. We had conversations with Hurley. We're willing to do the education for free. We were willing to we have a contract with them for municipal solid waste. We're willing to continue to work with them. Our prices were a lot cheaper. So I just, you know, we're willing to do the work, and I'm not saying, I think it's going to take other private entities. So I'm not saying that what Hurley did was wrong. We're all going to have to expand. If we're doing 100% organics by 2030, we can't, right now under the DC permit, we're only allowed to have 5,000. We reached that limit last year. We've tried to ask for a modification. It's pending approval up to 7,500. So it would be hard for us to necessarily separate and accept that anyway. But I just, before we start these pilot programs through all over the place, let's talk to the agent.
I just want to trademark in reference to the realization the term Gus Plus, and really appreciate the direction the UCRA is going on that.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say, you're talking about a pilot program. That company that they're speaking of on Herds Road in Highland has been doing the Garlic Festival for the past 2 years. They've been able to divert over 90% out of the waste stream and into composting. And they also take all of the organic waste from SUNY New Paltz. And so they've been doing that for a number of years. So I do believe it's achievable.
Legislator Malone. Two quick questions. One is on the tipping fee. And I've worked with more and more aggressive tipping fee. You wouldn't gas for 50 cents a gallon. You wouldn't see too many Teslas or Priuses. And while we're trying to figure out eventually what we're going to do with our solid waste, until we get to a point where more people are composting, garbage cans are a little smaller,
I think the tipping fee has to kind of be a part of that. We could probably, just by raising the tipping fee, you're going to cut down on a high percentage. I know it's not a fun thing to talk about. It's almost like a tax. The second, you can touch on it real quick. The second question is on, I don't know if you guys have talked about it. If you have, I'll listen to the meeting later and just say that. Have you guys discussed, you want to continue single stream? Should we be separating more? And the last thing is, and as a lawyer, I'll appreciate your opinion on this, but I've long thought that our board and the people that we appoint there should have their own lawyer. They should have board counsel, and they shouldn't be sharing a lawyer with the people they're supposed to be overseeing, that there should probably be two lawyers there, agency counsel and board counsel. And I'm just wondering what you think about that concept. So tipping fee,
yep.
Single, dual, board counsel.
So I'll start with, you know, the tipping fee. We're already fairly high when you look regionally, and so it's something that we'll take into consideration in this year's budget cycle, but I don't want to get kind of out of whack with other counties locally. So when you have flow control, you have to be mindful that you're essentially controlling where it's similar to like a utility raising their rates. When you have flow control and everything's required to go there, you have to be very judicious about raising something like a tipping fee. So I'm not dismissing it out of hand, but just say that it's under consideration. Let me jump to the third. I don't think a second council would be necessary. I have had conversations with the board and will be presenting a plan for legal counsel at kind of the next board meeting that is a little bit more comprehensive than we have now, but I'm not sure that I believe we need two board members. I work at the behest of the board and they set policy, and so it's kind of like saying the clerk of the legislature should have a different attorney than the legislative members. I don't know. I'd have to think more on that. What was your second point?
Well, sorry. Just real quick on that. I mean, we have contracts with, I mean, you, writing of contracts that sometimes I've board attorney. Members. I'm talking about the RA for the whatever they would be, department heads or over there, and you have the same attorney. You know, when they have an issue with someone they're supposed to oversee, the board, they have the same attorney. I mean, there is a million different examples over the last 5 or 6 years where board members have expressed not understanding what powers they actually have to oversee and what to do. And I think you can probably trace that back to a lot of the legal advice that they're getting. And you're putting the attorney in an impossible position because he's working for you and he's giving you legal advice, the plant manager, the environmental specialist, you have over there, I'm not sure what the title is, and then they have to turn around and go, well, what are we allowed to tell them? And now that attorney is telling them what they can and can't do. It is a problem. We have the same problem on the IDA, but I'm a big proponent of board counsel, and I'm disappointed that we're not going that direction. But I think they did set some money aside, knowing, I mean, that's happened recently, that money was put aside for legal questions. That tells me they need counsel one way or another. They've got to a point where they've now set money aside because they have to go elsewhere to get legal counsel.
Well, they always have had outside counsel for certain things, right? Like the agency attorney is more of a generalist and always has been, or is more environmental law and waste, whereas you're always going to need, if you have an HR issue, you're always going to need to hire outside counsel. There's money aside in their line that if they ever have a question and need legal guidance that they're not comfortable with the agency attorney giving them, they can seek an outside opinion.
And the first person they're going to talk to about that is the counsel that they might not be comfortable with that they want to go and get information about.
They don't
that'd
need
their
to do
first,
that.
That'd be their point person.
All right. Legislator Green, was this brought up in the reform committee at all, the legal representation?
Not yet. There has not really been a discussion yet. It certainly
is part of the intergovernmental, you know, the contract and everything else. I think, you know, I think that it's a good point, but it has not yet been discussed. We've been really focused on waste diversion.
Great. I'm going to take Legislator Nolan and come back to your
Single stream versus dual stream. I mean, there's a law in the books right now requiring dual stream. City of Kingston is doing dual stream after kind of being given a waiver. So, you know, one of my priorities is to get an enforcement officer. I think we need to do this with education, but I don't see any reason why we're not requiring the haulers to do dual stream recycling.
We run the impression to that point about that we hired a lawyer because you guys needed somebody to be able to regulate proper recycling. Going back a couple of years, has that happened? Have we started to?
They haven't had a recycling compliance officer in quite some time.
Okay,
the answer to that is no.
Yeah, you need somebody out there.
Yeah, just return to the question that agency council, board council for a moment. I think that a situation in which you need two separate councils like that is a situation of problem. And in most nonprofits, you have a council that serves the organization, and that means they give advice to the board, they give advice to the members, or whoever is how the structure is set up. And I think that in this organization, which is a quasi-governmental agency, that it similarly, the council should support the organization. And to the extent that's possible, the board, the staff, and those that are served all represent one unit that gets served by council that's providing information. I think that there are mechanisms already in place if that breaks down so that there can be another council. But it's a duplication of services and expenses in a situation where everything is working well. And so it's much better to strive to have the agency work well and have a unified goals and plans and strategies that back up that goal rather than a multiply council. Because if you have two councils, you have at least three opinions.
Legislator Collins.
I'm the good legislator, Nolan. Having been board president of a library that was been contentious for a while, we have one council. But when there's an issue, that council refers us to people he knows can handle a specific issue. And that works well for us, I think. That's worked well for us. I think that's what I think would make sense for the agency, too. They get one representation, one opinion, and that opinion tends to know who they can go to for employment issues, for other issues that aren't his specialty.
Legislator Maloney, and then we're going to move
on. Just real quick, now I don't want to get into a big debate about it, but we're talking about trash. This is not a not-for-profit. It's not a library. This is watch The Sopranos. This is a big deal. This is ultimately, this is tens of millions of dollars just flying around, a lot of huge decisions. We appoint a board. A lot of times these boards that we appoint, if anybody watched the IDA interviews the other day, we're appointed, we send these people off to the RA, the IDA, they have, it's not no fault of theirs, many times they're very intelligent, they have no idea what the job is they're doing, and then we give them a lawyer that has a relationship with the powers that be. I don't want to get into a big debate, but it's just apples and oranges in it.
Legislator, can you send me an email about it, and I'll make sure we follow up?
Sure.
Thank you.
The next item on reports is solar mapping training, and I'm excited to meet with Director Ryder in a week or two. We're setting up a meeting. If anyone wants to have any follow-up discussions, please let me know, and I'll put it on our agenda, and then we'll bring it up next month. The solar mapping training is still happening. This week, this Thursday, is the fourth week of the training, so next month, Legislator Green and I will let you know how the training is going. Unless you'd like to say anything for now.
Well, in terms of solar mapping training, I just did also want to mention that last week we had Eleanor Peck from the Clean Energy Communities and Tom Conrad giving a case study of Marbletown, and that is recorded. and I'll be sure to send a copy to Liz to send around as a link with, because it was extremely valuable, and the fact that Marbletown is able to bring in over $600,000 by using existing programs. Unfortunately, the Clean Energy Communities program may be phased out, and I think one of the things that the zero waste, I mean, get my committees mixed up, sorry, the Renewable Energy Implementation Plan Working Group, the Renewable Energy Working Group, is going to try and recommend is that we encourage NYSERDA to keep the clean energy program funded because it is so valuable, and with incentives, municipalities will move forward. But it's, since solar mapping comes under the renewable energy, can I say a few other words about that now?
Great.
Okay. So the way the Renewable Energy Working Group is working is with each municipality, wherever they are, whether they've taken a solar mapping training or already have a report that needs to be implemented. And so we're working with each of the municipalities. And I think by September, we'll have everyone engaged. We have more than half of the municipalities, and a lot of fairly advanced work is going on in New Paltz and Saugerties, Rosendale and Hurley are all at least have a plan and are moving forward. And many of the other municipalities, including, and I don't want to get too far ahead, but it's hopeful that out in Hurley, in Olive, a large portion of Olive is the DEP and the reservoirs, and we may be able to work something out there. We're also in very positive communication with Central Hudson, and I know that, you know, Central Hudson, there was a lot of difficulty over consolidated billing and rates, but I think they are pretty sincere in wanting to figure out how to solve some of the interconnection problems. And so anyway, it's a wonderful, essentially brain trust of people that know a lot about how to implement renewable energy and storage. And we're also looking at possibly working with the New York Power Authority. Several of these projects are county-owned or town-owned or school district-owned, and the Power Authority is empowered to work with municipalities. So there are a lot of different moving parts, but we also have a report due out in June, and I think we'll be able to make that. But having some internship help would be very appreciated.
So because we have some interviews with economic development today for the IDA, I'm gonna try to wrap up soon, but Minority Leader Roberts asked me to share a couple of things for new business. One is about the Rapid Act, which the governor looks like is including in the budget, and it'll be too late to create this memorializing resolution. But I think it's an interesting discussion for this committee. RAPID stands for the Renewable Action Through Project Interconnect and Deployment Act. Minority Leader Roberts, would you like to discuss it at all?
Yeah, you're right about that. The governor's budget will be coming out soon, and I believe this will be part of it, the RAPID Act. We may have to amend it or at least come up with another action plan. I just give this to you, Chairman Ewing, so you can test the waters with your committee, research on it, and you know, see what temperature the room is, and whether we want to move forward opposing it or take no action at all.
Great, thank you. I had a discussion with County Executive Metzger about it today, and I think part of my concern was greenwashing and calling a giant project somewhere in the Catskills that captures energy and calls itself a hydro plant
could be dangerous for our environment. So that was my concern. And it looks like there's a lot of support for Rapid Act, and mostly what County Executive Metzger said is it changes the jurisdiction of who, which agency deals with large projects. So I'm excited to discuss it more. But we just got it yesterday. That's why I came in so late. Same with this other packet. I like Minority Leader Roberts' concept of having a 24-hour recycling center, and this little package is about that. Can you tell us about that, please?
Yeah, when I was down in Florida, I had the convenience of going to a recycling center, and I noticed there was no gates on it. It was open all night, 7 days a week. We're kind of burdened now by having either a recycling in the bin once a week by pickup or bringing it to the transfer station in our hometowns. And most of you know that our local transfer stations are open at limited hours. I think, you know, every town is different. You can check on the website. I know Platicle, for instance, is open one weekend and maybe 3 or 4 days from like 10 to 4 during the week. A lot of people get home from work at 5 o'clock and, you know, can do their recycling then.
Wonderful. Thank you. And we'll have this on the agenda next month, and I'd love to hear Director Ryder's feedback. I'll put this on our agenda. Legislator Nolan asked me to add CMRR emissions to old business, but before that, I'm just going to mention for the parks, public spaces and recreation item, I'm in the process of meeting with a lot of people, including I'm reaching out to Amanda in the executive department, the DPW, Dutchess County Parks, Legislator Kovacs said he'd like to help out, so I'm reaching out to Legislator Kovacs. And different department heads like Director Berger and whoever this could affect. We want to make sure we're meeting with a lot of people. I met with Legislator Nolan this week, so there's not much to report as far as progress except getting feedback. Legislator Nolan, CMRR emissions.
Yes, and air quality studies. So I wondered if we could have just an update on what kind of monitoring that they're planning. And I guess in reference to the announcement this past week that there is the potential for biodiesel as an alternative, what the time frame of that might be, whether that biodiesel engine is a separate program from other funding that was announced, because those might be on quite different time frames, and maybe a greenhouse gas inventory type analysis would apply if we're switching from diesel to biodiesel, and to begin discussions of how much biodiesel would be needed and where would it come from to run in such an engine. So just the kind of, maybe since we're short for time, just a kind of big picture look at the time frames for those various considerations or any progress that's been made on any of them.
What I can share is that we did receive word from Castle Mountain Railroad that they had deployed ambient air quality monitoring devices in the carriages. The model that they used was an ATMO2 Pro. All caps ATMO2 Pro. So we're still kind of researching that to get a little more familiarity exactly on that unit, how it works, what it monitors, how we download the data, etc.
And where in the cabins they are, maybe some diagrams.
So there were pictures that were shared. I'll share those with you. Bigger picture, I don't have anything to provide for discussion.
Legislator Stewart. And then Legislator Green.
This is indirectly related to air quality issues in the Catskill Mountain Railroad, but it is related to some work that was recently done by the Catskill Mountain Railroad on land that apparently is owned by the county. And I was wondering if you had an update on like what happened and why did they do this?
So prior to any kind of announcement regarding their grant last week, on the 22nd of March, the county wrote a letter to Catskill Mountain Railroad regarding their assets and use of the corridor, which is owned, which is, let me just back up, you know, this letter from March 22nd was in reference to what's often called the undesignated portion. So this is the portion of the corridor. It's 1.8 miles from Route 28A to Basin, processed through four different municipalities and four different legislative districts.
That 1.8 mile, yes, including mine, yes.
So that's all. So that's what we're calling the undesignated part. The permit that was granted to CMR by the legislature and signed by the commissioner of DPW this past fall only gives them permission to operate up to Route 28A. And it's very explicit in the fact that this does not give any type of permission to CMRR to access, maintain, or work on other portions of the corridor. Through some site walkovers, we were able to see that they had been cutting trees and clearing along the tracks on the portion of the corridor that is owned by the county, deeded, you know, in fee. And there was also a significant amount of activity on the parcel where the county has an easement through that parcel. So there was a letter that was written to CMRR stating that that was not allowed.
Who wrote the letter?
Their current. That was, it went from Department of Public Works, since they issue.
Who signed the letter?
Dean Rylowicz.
Legislator Green.
I just want to say that I believe
Legislator Litz and I talked to the chairman about reconvening the Trail and Rail Advisory Committee so that these things could be sorted out and then brought back here. There are not a lot of people here today, but at previous meetings, it's taken a lot of the time and it really belongs in track. So I don't know for sure, but
so far we've been trying to keep this discussion in this committee about the engine and the environment in particulate matter, and if there's trail conversations, it should be in public works or hopefully track at some point soon.
And I completely agree with Legislator Nolan that there should be a greenhouse gas inventory on the benefits, the presumed benefits of biodiesel. I did do some research and it looks positive, but we should know for sure.
Great. Legislator Malone?
Yeah, so I think we should probably have Dean come in and answer to the letter he wrote. I'm under the impression, I'm even concerned about some trespassing, but you're dipping way into policy here, and if you're going to go after and send threatening letters to a private organization that does a lot in the community, why not bring it in? Why not call the railroad in to a meeting and talk to them about it? Now we're using county resources to go walk and try to see if they've cut down a tree. I'm under the impression that the only live trees that were cut down were on private property. Private property I'm worried about trespassing on, by the way, because they do function on private property. I'm glad you think it's funny, but why not have Dean in here? Why not have Ernie Hunt in here? And let's have a conversation before you guys in the executive branch of government go send a threatening letter from an underling, the second in command of DPW, which is kind of bizarre to me, sends a threatening letter to a Catskill Mountain Railroad. Where is the scrutiny on all these other places that we have contracts with? Or, I mean, somebody's missing $55,000 and people are dying, and you're sending threatening letters to the railroad because they've moved a couple of dead trees. A couple of dead trees were moved. Do you have photographs for us? Do you?
Deputy Executive.
I'm talking to Deputy Executive Amanda Laval.
With the permission of the chair, you're talking to.
Excuse me. I'm talking. I raised my hand and got called on. Thank you very much. Usually you have the decency to raise your hand before you disagree with every single thing I said, and I'd appreciate you to continue that.
Legislator Nolan is on the list to speak. Deputy Executive Laval, would you like to respond? You don't have to, because I'd rather have this discussion with the board.
Yeah, just very different reasons. So that is something that we walk at least once a year. And it is a very good use of county resources to make sure that we have eyes on that corridor. Number two, the language in the permit that was reviewed and approved by the Public Works Committee and the legislature specifically says that there's not to be activity beyond the permitted area.
No, I was just going to say, when this was brought up last month, I did act upon it. A few of the things that were discussed, and found out that most of the work was done at the behest of the property owner to remove some trees that were on their property. When you have an easement, you're not allowed to build anything on an easement. You're not allowed to do anything to disrupt the purpose of the easement. But the maintenance requirement on an easement, unless it's stated in there, falls upon the property owner.
Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, in addition to this being not the direct responsibility of this committee, it is the direct responsibility of the executive's office to enforce, implement, interpret contracts. And if we have a question about it, I think we can raise that question. But to insinuate that somehow the executive office is overstepping their bounds in looking at how a contract is implemented, I think is wrong. The property owner and the county can be in communication about the management of that easement. That would be respectful on all the parties. And I strenuously object to characterizing any member of the staff of this county as an underling. It's not the case in any relationship that I've experienced in the county. And I think we should be very cautious to have respect for each person proceeding, especially when they're within the scope of their duties, as seems to be the case here.
So Director, push me if I could respond real quick.
I mentioned no names. And, you know, the conversation about how we interact with our vendors, I think we need to get more information before we draw conclusions. If we did that, I think we would understand the situations much better than we do.
Deputy Executive Lavelle.
I'd just like to offer that I did walk the corridor, and it's clearly not on only the easement property. It was on the entire 1.8 miles, where there had been significant recent clearing.
Let's get some photographs. Let's have the Catskill Mountain Railroad and their lawyer in, and let's discuss it. Sounds like there's different opinions from different legislators. And what if it turns out that, and maybe the county attorney, by the way, the definition of underling, a person lowered status or rank. My point was, if we're going to send a letter, first of all, I think the legislature should be discussed with the legislature. It does seem like harassment. It does seem different than we treat every other contract. And why not send a letter from yourself, the head of DPW, or the county attorney? It just seems interesting. But I stand by that crazy language, and I stand by the idea that the Catskill Mountain Railroad is being harassed like they always have. They just got a big grant. It's a fantastic thing, and it's been amazing because they had to go around the planning director to actually get it done. Imagine the tens of millions of dollars and what this railroad could have done without the executive branch of government working against them to kneecap them and undermine them and stop them from getting grant money for the last 20 years.
It's a fascinating
just amazing
issue, and I'm excited to reform track.
Can I get motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. And please remember to come see Liz to sign the minutes and each resolution. Thanks, everyone.